Welcome to Women Express. We're back again. We've been pretty consistent this year with episodes every month. Thanks to our Women Express team, Claire and Nia and Emmett, who does all the editing, Claire, who sets everything up, and Nia, who just oversees it all. So we have a great team working with Women Express podcast now. What can you look forward to? Well, you can look forward to more of these podcast interviews coming through, but we are continuing to share with you that the Women Express summits are coming up. We don't expect them to actually kick off until May. I know we've been promising them for a while. We just are planning to get it right this time. So I think you should look forward to that. There will also be webinars that we really are excited about. Those will probably be launched around the same time, the first part of May, if not the late part of April. So just stay tuned. I'm sorry I'm being a little nebulous, but we are working hard to make these Women Express podcasts, summits, and webinars available to you. And what will we be talking about? Women in power, or how women can get the power, or how we can use our power. You know, recently Nia said to me something that changed the way that I even see women's leadership. And she said, you know, if we're ever going to get a woman to the White House, then what we need to do is to establish a legacy or a template for our leadership, because our leadership brings something unique and different. And we think, I agree with her, that the world needs our leadership more than ever. So continue to listen to this podcast with our great, great, great interviewees that come on, my friends, most of them are friends of mine. Keep listening. But the most important thing is follow us. Follow us on womenexpresspodcast.com. Follow us on Instagram, and we're Instagram women_express_. Follow that. Share this with your friends. Subscribe, but mostly share. We're building a community of power up women, women who are powerful, women who want to be powerful, and women who are sharing their power. So share with the community. And then lastly, if you want more information about Women Express and the things that we're doing, we have a new website. It's on the Speaking with Impact website, where you'll find Women Express. You all know that I have been for 30 years teaching Speaking with Impact. So it's only natural that Women Express would spawn out of Speaking with Impact. But when you go to the new webpage, you'll see a Women Express little window. Click on that, and it'll take you to, well, let's say it this way. It'll take you on a journey to Women Express and all the things that we believe in and the things that we feel will help you be the powerful women that you already are. So let's unleash that and come on, women, let's express. Shortly, you'll hear our new podcast interview that will begin in just a minute. Welcome to Women Express. I'm your host, Denise Harrington. And today I have with me someone that I call a friend, a colleague, and a partner. Partner in leadership and development of individuals. And specifically today, we're going to talk about leadership for women. So welcome, Jennifer Simpson. Yay.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me, Denise. I'm just thrilled. I love being in conversation with you.
Well, same. We got that little saying from the person that I interviewed before you, and she has a little saying that she says, same. Mm-hmm. We're making that live. So I'm going to read your bio. I don't try to mess things up. I just go with what I see. So Jennifer Lynn, I love that, Simpson, PhD, is the CEO of Integrated Work, bringing over 30 years of experience across various sectors to foster meaningful collaboration. I would say that's very true about you. And effective leadership, with a bachelor's degree from Syracuse University and a master's and a doctorate from the University of Colorado at Boulder, she continuously expands her expertise through immersive leadership and JEDI programs, which I love that whole idea of the JEDI programs. We should talk about that a little too. She's the creator, and she also wrote the book. She created the Cohen Method, and she wrote a book about it, which we have on our shelf. Although people out there, you won't be able to see it, but we have it there. Not unless you're okay
with it. It looks beautiful.
Doesn't it look beautiful? I love it.
It does.
It's aimed at transforming traditional leadership paradigms for today's challenges. Through personalized executive coaching and transformational experiences, she empowers individuals to amplify their impact. We have that in common. Additionally, she teaches university courses and collaborates with executives to evolve organizations in a changing world. So we're going to talk about the method, so I'm not going to go into too much about it, but this really caught my eye. The Cohen Method offers breakthrough leadership for a divided world. Yay! Mm-hmm. Inspired by Zen Buddhism approach of enlightenment. And it reimagines organizational structures as kind, that's the K, open, that's the O, adaptive, that's the A, and networks, that's the end. So I am not going to say much more, because we can start right out by sharing with me why you see this is the breakthrough method for a divided world, because we are certainly in a divided world. Yes.
Aren't we?
Tiresome, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, tell me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Well, first, thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. I think the book was really an outgrowth of 25, 30 years of doing this work, both in my scholarship academically, but also working with people and organizations truly all over the world. And we now have decades, literally decades of research that tell us that teams and organizations do best when people experience conditions of psychological safety sufficient to speaking up. Right. And so that's the K. It's not about being nice. It's not about being polite to your face and saying mean things about you behind your back. It's about really recognizing that when we bring empathy to our human relationships and we create the conditions where people feel free to bring their voices forward, that's the birthplace of innovation and creativity. And so if we want to come up with breakthrough solutions, we can't perpetuate environments where people are afraid to speak up, feel like if they step out of line, they're going to get in trouble, and therefore see problems but keep it to themselves because they don't want to be the ones to get in trouble. Yeah. And so I really believe that organizations that are embracing empathy and really attending to creating environments where people feel free to speak up, are embracing openness and transparency, giving people access to the information they need to do a great job and make decisions on behalf of the whole, are able to be sort of nimble and adaptive in the face of that, and recognize that none of us are doing any of this in isolation. We're all part of these networks of relationship. When we attend to those four things, we create better outcomes and we find our way out of that stuck place into breakthroughs where we can really find solutions that aren't just common ground, right? Which I often experience as least common denominator, right? Like nobody can argue with it, but nobody's very happy and it doesn't actually solve the problem, right? When we're solving for common good solutions instead, that's where people can say, you know, the way I see it from my perspective, these are the ingredients that will help us come up with a new solution.
Well, to get to that at the table is a whole thing. I mean, where someone says, this is how I see it, because our world in the past, and I'll say in the past, with great hopes for the future, our world in the past has been about, this is the way I see it, and this is the way I see it, or this is the way the paradigm, even more so, this is the way the paradigm sees it. And this is the way we all should do it, because this is what the paradigm says we should do. It's such an archaic way of looking at organizations being together, don't you think?
Yeah, and societies more broadly. I mean, I think part of what we're looking at is how do we solve for these things in the workplace? But more and more, our organizations are interconnected, right? During COVID, we saw how supply chain breakdowns impacted every sector, right? And where those things were most resilient are in the places where there were relationships, not just contracts or agreements, right? And places where you had procurement in the middle, supply chains broke down really quickly. In places where I had someone at the other end of the phone that I could call to help me figure out this logistical dilemma, some people found solutions to those problems. Wow. And so these are really issues that have, you know, broad scale impact in the workplace, in our communities, and really in, you know, a much more deeply interconnected world that we're trying to, you know, make survive and thrive into the future.
I like the word thrive. Well, tell me, how does this have, tell me about how this was inspired, the Koan method, by Zen Buddhism? Because I know lots of people out there know something about some kind of meditation and or mindfulness or something. So give me a little look into that. I'm curious about what that means.
Yeah, what I love about the idea of a koan. So in Zen Buddhism, a koan is a mantra or a saying. Sometimes it's a short story that you reflect on or meditate on that isn't designed to have an answer, right? It's not a puzzle to solve that you logic your way through and find your way to the answer. If anything, it's designed to loosen your brain's grip on those overarching narratives you were talking about, right? It, when I think about what is the sound of one hand clapping, for example, there's not an answer to that question, but it calls on me to question, well, what is sound? Can you make sound with only one hand? What is it that I'm listening for? And it starts to have me unravel all of these assumptions about what noise is, what sound is, what hearing is, what my experience is, in a way that enlarges my notion of the problem, right? And so it's not about answering the question. It's about realizing that whatever I'm stuck on might not be the right thing. And so this principle of sitting in the uncertainty, right? Sitting with an irreducible problem long enough for the breakthroughs to find us is really at the heart of the spirit I hope people will bring to this work. So the acronym, the Kind Open Adaptive Network, those are tools and skills that people can develop. But the mindset or the disposition is, when things are uncomfortable, when I'm experiencing conflict, can I sit in that discomfort and get curious about what might be on the other side of it so that I can find my way through instead of backing up or trying to overwhelm what's on the other side of the table?
That's very, very interesting. Trying to overwhelm what's on the other side of the table. I love that idea. Tell me this. Do you have an example? I know you gave the example of the supply chain, but do you have a specific example where you applied these principles in an organization?
We use these principles all the time in our own organization and with the clients that we work with. I mean, we do work in mission-driven organizations all over the world. And so we do a lot of work in healthcare and education and the environment, where the kinds of problems we're trying to solve fundamentally can't be solved inside the walls of one organization, right? We're looking at these sort of complex, how do you transform education? How do you transform healthcare? And so what we find, you know, I've been doing a series of Koan conversations, and the spirit of the Koan method is really about bringing a different kind of question to these challenges or problems that have us so stuck. And so over the course of the last year, we worked, for example, with the Bureau of Primary Health Care to really look at the impact of climate change on community health. And part of the work that we did there was really bring different kinds of questions. So starting with empathy, right? Asking the questions that really get at, how is this affecting people's lives? You know, how are their worlds being disrupted? You know, where are there places that we can shed new light, open the doors, bring more information so that people can exercise different choice in their life? Nice. And when you create that kind of container for people, we find that instead of being stuck looking backwards at what the problems are that feel so insurmountable, instead you get people to shift into creative thinking and be future focused on what might be possible. And I think that's really part of the power of the method, is it dials down that sort of fear-based, reactive, defensive, I've got to protect my world the way it is, and opens people into curiosity and discovery. And that's really the birthplace of all manner of creative solutions.
I love this idea of curiosity. I actually used it when I was asking you the question, because I was in a workshop the other day, and they were saying one of the best ways, and it sounds like this is in alignment with what you're talking about, one of the best ways to unravel where you're stuck is to be curious.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Or, how could I apply that? And expand your consciousness around the way that you see life, because that expanded consciousness will create a different way of being. Don't you think?
Exactly. I absolutely believe that. And I think the beauty and a little bit the irony of that is that when we feel stuck, what that feeling is telling us is that we've run up against the limits of what we already know to solve for what's right in front of us.
Wow.
Right. And so when we feel stuck, it's because what we already know, what we've already been doing, can't get us to the next place. And so you would think it would be obvious that, okay, well, if I don't know how to get to the next place, I've got to learn something new. I need to be curious. Maybe I need to see if someone else has found a solution that might be workable. But instead, what do? We double down on what we already know, right?
Oh, yeah.
We throw up walls. We back away from the discomfort. Or we try to overwhelm what's on the other side of the table, right? We try to make what we know work here, even if it's not working.
Even if it's not working, because you take a look at what's going on in our world today, in our own country. I mean, it has to be uncomfortable staring at or being a part of staring at something that's really stuck and not working. And
Absolutely.
Being able to allow yourself to see, and hear another way of being. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, and we've built theater around it, right? There's sort of this like performative aspect of disagreeing with each other that, you know, maybe makes for good television a little bit, but doesn't actually move us to a place where we've got more hope that tomorrow is going to be better than yesterday was.
Or that we can be innovative.
Right. Absolutely. That we can find our way to better solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So this is this whole idea of Cohen. I just love it. Of course, I asked you earlier in our pre-call, how does this really work for women? Because it looks like a lot of the principles are, you know, characteristics that women naturally have. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that men can't do it, okay? Because we need everybody to open up and begin to lead from a different perspective. But those skill sets of empathy and openness and transparency and sharing and community, because it sounds like what you're saying is that this method will help us create a functioning community, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And that when we recognize our interdependence, right, the networked nature of how we are in relationship with one another, it just has us make different choices, right? If I understand at a deep level that you being worse off can't possibly make me better off, mm-hmm. I'm going to look for different solutions than if I don't worry so much about that, right? Mm-hmm. But we live in a world where this win-lose dynamic by default, by design, really creates more losers than winners, right? That's how the game is played, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Only one person can win. Mm-hmm. Everyone else loses. And so we have a world full of people who feel like they're coming up short, who feel like the world is telling them they don't get the top spot. Even if we get the top spot today, we know that someone's put a target on our back and they're coming for us because they want that top spot. Yeah. How does that make the world better for any of us? Right. And so instead, how do we bring that spirit of curiosity to say, what would a common good look like? How can we really come up with solutions that make my life better because your life is also better? Right. That's when we start solving for problems like that, I mean, we've got the technology we need. We've got the resources we need. We have everything we need on this planet to solve our collective problems. Mm-hmm. We just need the will to do it in a way that really lifts all boats, because, you know, a world where a smaller and smaller number of people sit atop a pile of suffering is not really a great way to, you know, build a future, right?
Sitting on a pile of suffering. I love that concept. Not only sitting on a pile of suffering, but sitting in lotus or sitting in meditation on a pile of suffering, you know, meditating about it.
Yeah. It's like, great, you've made it to the top. Now what?
Yeah, it's interesting. The reason why I love that concept or that analogy about sitting on a pile of suffering is it seems to me, from my own experience of working with people, helping them to communicate more effectively, that just thinking about it is usually not enough, or meditating on it or any of that. You have to have a technique or a methodology. That's why I love this as a methodology. So if you could explain to me a little bit about the methodology itself, how is it applied as you use the different acronyms, the K, the O, the A, and N?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, the book is organized around mantras, right? So I don't believe in checklists. I don't believe that there's any like top 10 tips out there that if only you did these things, the world would be transformed. If that existed, somebody else would have done it a long time ago. So the mantras in this book are really designed to disrupt our common patterns of thinking. And so part of the invitation is for people to bring this spirit of kindness, openness, adaptiveness, and thinking of ourselves in network to the challenges that they're facing. And so when you think about how to create kind cultures, I have two things that I ask people to focus on. How do you create containers of care where people experience psychological safety sufficient mm-hmm. to having confidence to bring their voice forward, right? Mm-hmm, so that mm-hmm. there is real inclusion, that there's real participation, contribution, and voice. The second piece of creating kind cultures, though, is recognizing that we're all operating from some foundation of trauma oftentimes, that the lived experience of working in our organizational systems, most of which are still born from the Industrial Revolution, mm-hmm. you know, have been treating people like mechanical parts for too long. Mm. And that's created suffering, right? Mm. And so we've got to acknowledge the ways that we've baked that into policies and practices and procedures in our organizations and do the healing work to transform that. So each of these principles has two mantras associated with it that leaders can use to say, what am I doing to create the conditions in my organization where empathy will thrive, where transparency becomes more possible, where we can be more nimble, and where we really see ourselves as connected and interdependent?
So if I were going to say to you, and this is almost seems like it's a dumb question, because your vision for our future, what would it look like? If you could paint it in words, what would it look like?
Oh, that's such a beautiful question. Thank you for asking it. I want to think for just a minute so I'm not too off the cuff on this. I mean, you know, we're recording this on International Women's Day. There was a State of the Union address last night. It's so striking to see what people will stand up for, literally and figuratively, right? So you watch what it is that people rise to their feet and applaud for, or what people will boo and jeer against. And when I think about the future that I'm aspiring to, it's that we're creating a world where when I disagree with something, rather than pulling back and sneering and jeering, or, you know, having an expression on my face that's designed to say, you're dumb and I don't believe in you, that instead I get curious, and that I hold coming up with good solutions for all of us as more important than being right today.
Yeah.
You know, I think what we need to let go of most in order for this mindset shift to be possible is this need that's gotten pretty deeply wired in us to win the argument, right?
Yes.
Like, come out on top today, because we consistently sacrifice the future for that like fleeting momentary victory. And if we really want to build that thriving future that we were talking about, we've got to find ways to take whatever it is that hooks us, that moves us into sort of either defensive or aggressive mode, and instead say, wow, I never thought of it like that. That's such an interesting perspective. Mm-hmm. My life didn't teach me to understand these circumstances that way. What is it in your life that taught you to experience these circumstances that way, right? Like, if I ask you that question, that's not a threat to my identity. My world doesn't have to become smaller. My world gets to get bigger, right? I get to grow my world when I listen to your experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we've really trained people to feel threatened by other people's lived experience. And I think we've got to find a way to get beyond that.
We have to find a way to get beyond that. And it really turns me to the last letter in Cohen, which is networking. It's such an important piece of the puzzle. I think no one can even be listening to this and not say that they had some kind of networking experience. But I think what you're saying is slightly different about networking. It's not going to a situation or going into a situation where I'm looking for something for me. It's I'm going into the situation to be curious because of the way that it will affect me.
Yeah, that's a beautiful distinction. Mm-hmm. And I think even more broadly than that, I mean, this isn't about, you know, going to a happy hour to, you know, add 12 contacts
exactly.
on LinkedIn, right?
Exactly.
This isn't about building out your Rolodex for those who are old enough to remember what those are. It's really about recognizing that we are interdependent already, right? This isn't actually about doing something different. It's about seeing and acknowledging the reality of our lived experience in a different way.
Wow.
There are a lot of places where we operate as though we're much more independent or self-reliant or self-sufficient than we really are. And so we make decisions that we think, you know, are in our own individual best interest, but we're making our communities worse. We're making our neighbors worse. We're making things harder for our school district or the organizations that we are in competition with. And so we're creating an ecosystem that's full of tension and conflict instead of freeing creativity and really liberating people to say, you know, here's how we want to live with each other. This is the way of being in relationship and in community that we want to be our experience.
You know, it's interesting that you brought the word competition, because I started to think, so what happens to competition? I mean, how do we compete? How do we approach that?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that all competition is inherently bad. I mean, I think that places in which we sort of motivate and inspire each other to ever better has a lot of benefit associated with it, right? But again, it's back to the mindset. Like, is competition for the sake of helping us all be better? In which case, I want you to build the best product possible because it's going to challenge our team to build an even better one. Mm-hmm. Or do I just want to get, you know, my product to market and have yours be not good, right?
Yeah.
Am I more focused on you failing than I am on me succeeding?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I think there's a world in which all of us doing our very best is actually what makes the world better for all of us.
Yeah. It's a win-win formula. It's a win-win formula, which only makes innovation even more interesting and exciting, and great things come out of win-win.
Right.
If we just do it all the time, I'm sure that people would love to find, especially people who are aspiring in their roles as leaders, I'm sure they would love to lead a group of people who are firing on innovation all
Absolutely.
The time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, many of us have had the experience of working on a high performing team at some point where it was just exciting, right? There was a big problem we were trying to solve and people were throwing out ideas, and you can literally feel your neurons lighting up, right? There's electricity that sort of flows through your body when you're trying to solve a juicy problem like that. But too often, you know, that first idea emerges and it gets squashed, or, you know, you've got this big, brilliant idea and your competitor has undercut it in the marketplace before you even get it out the door. And again, I don't want this to come across as naive, right? I mean, I've worked in the global business world for 30 years. I mean, I understand that there are rules of competition, right? And mm-hmm. there's an economic system that we're operating in, and we've designed it to be pretty cutthroat, right?
Yes,
and so
we have.
Part of making this work requires that we look at the ways that we've baked things that aren't building the world we want into our existing systems. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been over a decade since Sheryl Sandberg wrote Lean In, probably 15 years now.
Wow, it's been 15 years? Oh my
goodness.
Been
a while. I have to look up the exact pub date, but we'll call it a hot minute. And I remember, I remember when that book came out, you know, there were a lot of people who praised it because, you know, there was a lot of self-determination and agency and, you know, women can do this for themselves. But there was also a lot of criticism that, I mean, not everyone has access. The doors aren't open to everyone. There are systemic issues at play. And at the time, Sheryl said, yes, that's true. And like, let's see what women can do for themselves. Okay, it's International Women's Day. We've done a lot for ourselves.
Yes, we have.
We have actually come a long way, and I don't want to diminish that very real progress in any way. And now that we've got 30, 50 years of women in the workforce in a different way, in different kinds of roles, you know, to go back to your earlier question, I think some of these principles are things that we're seeing more of in the workplace because women did bring them to the table, because they are more consistent with how women had been taught to run communities, to run schools, to, you know, be in the kinds of organizations that were more full of women than the workplace was in the last century. But what we found over this last 30 to 50 years is that those principles work for everyone. Mm-hmm. And so I don't see these as women's leadership skills. I really see these as breakthrough leadership skills, right? Mm-hmm. That any leader who wants to create the conditions that really unleash creativity and innovation and enable us to dream of a different future can adopt and apply these principles.
She's not saying, ladies, that there's not more space for us at the table.
Oh, there's so much more space for us at the table.
There's so much more space for us at the table. But it also would be great to be at the table with other leaders, male, female, and otherwise, that are bringing principles and methodologies can help us all win. I think it's a win-win world.
Absolutely. And, you know, I listened to a few of your more recent podcasts as I was getting ready for this today. And I loved the interview with the CEO at the Annie Casey Foundation. And, you know, you were talking about like, what do you do once you're at the table? Right. And I think there are many of us who've spent a long time like pounding at the door, trying to get that seat at the table. Well, now here we are. What are we going to do with that?
I agree.
Are we going to now like hold our ground and say, okay, woof, I've got in, let's barricade the door behind us so that mm-hmm. I can hold my spot. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to run the script that's always been running at this table. Or am I going to put my foot in the door and wedge it open a little bit for those coming behind me and ask different questions than might've been asked from that seat? Before.
From that seat. It's so funny. In the last couple of days, I've had several women say, oh my gosh, you know, we have a woman leader in our organization, but it's just horrible because she doesn't bring other people in. She wants to. So we start to model that industrial way of being, model organizational way of being model when we get there as women. And I love the idea that when you get there, because it is different. It's not a ladder situation. You know, we're so used to climbing the ladder. Women are not good in that kind of progression. But when you get there, you have to establish community. You do have to put your foot, you have to put your heel in the door, leave it open and bring community in. Male, female, but bring community in. Bring more women in so that it's not a competition where we lose because one of us made it to the top. It's a situation where we win because one of us made it to the top. I'm so happy you brought that up.
Yeah, absolutely. And truly, I mean, even more broadly, I say this in many ways throughout my book, but I mean, we're charting new territory, right? There we are. Even though there are pockets and examples of, you know, this team and that organization that have put some of these principles more into practice than others, there still isn't a handbook, right? And maybe there shouldn't ever be one. We're really looking at how do we lead from the heart? How do we lead from relationship and from connection so that the solutions we're coming up with are solutions that are good for everyone? And I truly believe that this has benefits in the marketplace. I mean, this has us be more connected to our customers and more connected to our investors. There are really ways in which orienting differently to things that we've treated very mechanistically throughout the Industrial Revolution and bringing more humanity to that actually enables us to recruit and retain talent better, to attract customers differently, to build our own marketplace ecosystem, right? I think I might have shared this example with you in our pre-call, but one of the stories I loved early in the pandemic was Unilever, right? So gigantic consumer products company.
Yeah.
And they recognized over a decade ago that their ability to be successful was heavily reliant on their business ecosystem. Part of that was supply chain, but they also have small partners all over the world, as you might imagine. And part of what they could see is that sometimes those small organizations could see a challenge and had the ability to like be nimble and be creative in a way that was just much harder in a large organization the size of Unilever. And so they created an open ideas platform that enabled people in their community to crowdsource challenges and say, this is what we're trying to solve for. Here's how we're trying to solve for it. And pre-pandemic, they were using that to identify opportunities for merger and acquisition, places they might make investments. You know, we'll invest a little bit of money over here. And if you come up with a great solution, then that's good for everybody. And so it was a good part of their business even before the pandemic. But when the pandemic hit in March of 2020, Unilever had two plants in the world that were producing small amounts of hand sanitizer. And all of a sudden, like, the world needed hand sanitizer and a whole lot of it overnight. Well, they mobilized the system that they had in place, and in less than 2 months were able to bring production lines, you know, to stand up production lines all over the world that had more than 60 plants producing millions of units of hand sanitizer overnight. It both helped the world, right? It addressed a public health need. And, you know, a lot of Unilever's competitors weren't super profitable in 2020. This is one of the things that helped Unilever pivot their strategic approach to stay profitable in a really challenging year. And so when we've got our network activated, right, when the strength of relationship all throughout our network is strong enough that people will take our call and will lean into wanting to help and will help us come up with creative solutions, it makes us more resilient in the face of, you know, a changing world that we can't always predict or control.
Well, it's interesting that you would bring up the beginning of the pandemic in March 2020, because talk about pivot. We left, Nia and I left, we were in Las Vegas working with a client, and it was amazing. Talk about hand sanitizer. It was everywhere, but no one really knew what it all meant. We were kind of half-heartedly dealing with this hand sanitizer thing. We closed down the training, the two-day training that we do on the 7th of March, which is today. Is that today, the 7th? Is today the 7th? It was yesterday? Yeah. So we got home on the 7th of March. So as of yesterday, 3 years later. And then on Monday, that Monday, 4 years, that's right, 4 years, that Monday, it all shut down. Mm. What saved our company was a phone call to that very same client that we had just left, that we had done so much work with and had built such a great relationship with their leadership team and the people that reported to them, that it took one call to the CRO at the time and just letting him know that we needed their assistance and that we would make good on that assistance by providing our program. And oh my goodness, did we ever, because our program was really needed during that time, because everyone went on Zoom and they want to stay connected with their customer and their clients via Zoom. And so it all took off, and it was our banner year. But it was the relationships. It was also thinking out of the box, because we could have frozen and just closed up shop. A lot of people did. But absolutely, just the person that I ended up calling and asking for assistance always felt his favorite mantra is expect to win. And so when I called him, I knew that I could win. I knew that that was someone in my system, my network, that would leverage us and that we could leverage. And it's interesting. Right. That's a different formula to leveraging one another. It's not a use, you know?
No, exactly. And I mean, you didn't cultivate that relationship for some transactional purpose because you knew that someday you'd need to make that call. But the moment you needed to make that call was far too late to begin developing that relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And so for all of us to recognize that, you know, we live in a human ecosystem, and the strength of our relationships, the strength of the bonds, and the care we take to nurture and tend them, even when we don't know if we will quote unquote need them, mm-hmm. like, really caring enough to build rapport and relationship with other humans is what allows us to be resilient in the face of hard things.
And we're going through a lot of hard things now. You know, I can't, and I'm sure you experience it. When you're a training consultant, the main thing that we all do in our world as training consultants or teachers is to inspire transformational change. So, you know, that's why I'm loving that we're having this conversation, because truly the Cohen method is about transformational change and to do it in a way that people can take real steps to make that happen. And it doesn't have to be airy fairy.
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is some of the most practical, grounded work I've ever done, right? That the recognizing that all change begins from right where we are really requires our capacity to cultivate things like presence, right? There is a place for mindfulness practices, for learning how to self-regulate, for taking care of ourselves so that we can be instruments of service and transformation in the world, right? And so there is a component of, the work starts a little bit on the inside, but it's because we want to build something different and better and more powerful and more impactful. And so in those places where there's not a good map, I think it's really important to have what I like to call fellow travelers, right? The people who are also trying to figure it out, but are committed, right? Who are already believers. And we're really working together to say, well, how could we approach this differently? We've been doing it the same way for 30 years or 60 years or 100 years. That's not working. What do we want to try instead?
Yeah, I think we're at that pivotal moment, Jen. I really do. I think we're at that place as a society, as communities, as cultures, that we have to start doing it differently. People shouldn't have to suffer to live or suffer to win, for that matter. I think that what you bring to the table is so needed in this day and age. I want to use one more example, and I love what you said about, you know, our connection, building that connection. Our seat, we are at the table, but building that connection at the table, that rapport is so important, bringing, leaving the door open. And I saw this picture of Billie Jean King yesterday. And she's actually in the book that I'm writing. I'm writing a book about women's leadership, and she's in there. And one of the reasons why I'm bringing it up and placing it at your feet for your grace is she was a competitor, but she left the door open by deciding, you know what? Women need to be paid more. We need to be at the table of finance, the table of revenue, the table of money. And so that's what she did. She went about finding ways within the relationships and networks that she built by being a competitor in the sports industry, and literally changed the way women's purses were for going forward. So it's amazing what we can do as women when we decide that there is service. I love that word that you brought up. I think that the word service needs to be a part of any leader's vocabulary, that you're really there to serve the people that and build relationship, because in relationship is service, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's how we build a world we all want to be a part of, right? And I'm really focused on those places where, you know, in our efforts to build a world that's good for each of us individually, or for our own, you know, little family, or, you know, our the in-group that we consider ourselves to be a part of, we're actually doing the opposite. We're creating communities where harms are getting greater, where divides are getting wider, we're sort of struggling to hold on to whatever it is we've been able to accrue to ourselves, feels like a job unto itself, right? Nobody wants to live that way. Nobody wants to live that way.
We really, really don't. We really don't. And there's a way out. Well, I really appreciate that you were inspired to write this book, gifted to write the book, nice download you got for writing the book, because I think that it is time. I mean, we cannot use the same old solutions to create a new world. And I think the sooner we realize that and begin to build bridges as opposed to building moats, we will have an opportunity to create a world that is what we all really would like. And even if you like to suffer, you can suffer and, you know, with happy people around you, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just think that people would love to just feel happier and just connect it more. So I think that this book will definitely bring that. And I encourage everyone to read it. The book is called, Where did it go? It's right.
Other side. There you go.
There it is.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. The Cohen Method. Breakthrough Leadership for a Divided World. It couldn't be a better book.
Thank you.
Couldn't be a better book for our times. And so I would call you the Cohen Method sage of our times. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that I was lucky enough to, one, call your friend and have experiences with you in our, not only in our business life, but in our personal life that brought us together. And I'm looking forward to working with you more. I'm so inspired by today's conversation that I'm like, okay, how do we collaborate more?
Excellent. Well, we've been working on that question for a while, but yeah. I've got full faith that the moment will arrive and we will have done the groundwork laying and built the relationship that will allow us to do great work when it shows up at our doorstep.
Yes, it will. So if you don't mind, would you please let everyone know what your website is and how to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. The best way to find the book is just at cohenmethod.com. That's cohenmethod.com. And from there, you can find out more about me and the work that we do with organizations to bring these principles into leadership all over the world. So thank you for making space for me today, Denise.
Yeah, and you're
happy,
welcome.
Happy International Women's Day to you.
We're taking it one day at a time. And you know what? Our leadership is powerful. So I'm looking forward to spending many of these Women's Leadership Days with you.
Indeed.
Thanks for being here. Here's to that.
Thank you.
All the best, and we'll speak again soon, I'm sure.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. I'm sure that many of you have questions and ideas. Don't forget that there's always an opportunity to bring speakers from our speaking group into your organizations. You're welcome to find out more about Jennifer Simpson and her Cohen Method, bring her into your organization. I just feel like it's time for us to start making some changes, not to just talk about it, but to be about it. And that's what we are about doing here. That's what the Women Express community is all about. So I promise to continue bringing you the best that I can bring you to help inspire your world, to help motivate you, to create change in your world, because it is our time. And it's time for us to do something about that. Talk to you next time. Looking forward to it. And come on, women, let's express.